But Leisha, why don't you review squamous cell, where we are and where we're heading?
Sure. Well, apparently we're headed from being a wallflower to an ugly stepchild or something, but I think there is a future for squamous cell, so hopefully squamous cell will get to dance at the party too. Basically, I'm going to tell you my summary first. So this is the take-home points about what I'm going to discuss. In your syllabus, there are three discussion points under squamous, and that's basically what I'm going to talk about. So the take-home points will be that gemcitabine is really becoming the drug of choice for squamous cell based on the Scagliotti study, which has been mentioned by a couple of the speakers, and I'll just show you again the squamous data, although gemcitabine can be used in adenocarcinoma as well. It's unlike pemetrexed, where the indication has been narrowed, you can use gem in either, but it's becoming a favorite choice for squamous. Cetuximab can be added to cisvinorelbine, a la the FLEX study, but it's not FDA approved, and I'll show you a little bit more in detail the data about the H-score that has been mentioned that may help us find a population of patients that do very well with this regimen, although it needs to be prospectively validated. And then I think that over the next couple of years, at future meetings with Neil, you will learn much more about targeted drugs in squamous cell and how well they're working. I'm very optimistic that that will happen. So the Scagliotti study, as was mentioned, this is one of the largest studies that's been done in lung cancer. And this was a non-inferiority study designed to look at cisgem and cispem. This was mostly done in Europe, where cisplatin is used a lot. And we were actually just discussing before the meeting over our dinner that cisplatin really is becoming much easier to use. I've been using more of it in my practice with Amend and other advances in supportive care. And I think there's a role for cisplatin in metastatic disease, is my personal opinion. But this study looked at cisgem versus cispem, and it was for all histologies, but there was a pre-specified histologic subgroup analysis that was to be performed. And I think it has been shown here are the overall curves, which were almost identical for all patients. But when you look at the squamous and the non-squamous, you see opposite trends. You see that the non-squamous patients do better with PEM-CIS, and this is one of the main bases for the narrowing of the indication, FDA indication for pemetrexed. But what doesn't get talked about as much, I think, is that for the squamous patients, and there were a minority of them in the trial, but still 473 is a good number, they did much better with the gem-CIS, and this was statistically significant, and overall survival is improved by over a month. So I think that for patients who are, you know, looking on the internet and seeing all these great advances in adenocarcinoma and EGFR mutations, and they're coming to you with squamous cell, you can tell them quite honestly that there are advances for squamous cell as well. The FLEX study, again, this is looking at the EGFR monoclonal antibody cetuximab added to a cisvinorelbine backbone of chemotherapy. And when this study was designed, patients had to be EGFR positive by immunohistochemistry, and that was very loosely defined. It was really, even if you had one cell that was positive to any degree for EGFR, you could go onto this trial. And this included cetuximab maintenance as well. The overall results of the study are statistically significant, but clinically unimpressive, I think, has been the take-home point. There was about a one-month improvement in median overall survival, and this has not gone forward, at least as far as I'm aware, with any FDA approval for cetuximab in this disease. However, more recently, we heard about an unplanned post-hoc analysis looking at the H-score. So what is the H-score? The H-score is taking the immunohistochemistry for EGFR and doing a much more qualitative and quantitative analysis of how much staining there was. They look at the degree of staining, was it just mild or was it bright, and how many of the cells of the whole tumor are involved. Is it just a subpopulation or really the majority? And so using those two metrics, you get a score from 0 to 400. And they did this post hoc analysis kind of cutting off in the middle above 200 or below 200. And so the patients with the higher H scores, the ones who had the more intense staining that involved more of the tumor cells, really did derive a benefit with the addition of cetuximab. And the patients with the lower H scores did not. So, I mean, I think this is very interesting data. Again, it was not a pre-planned analysis. It's a retrospective look. But I think that if it were prospectively validated, it would be very interesting. In contrast to some of the other mutation and molecular analyses we've been talking about, immunohistochemistry is a little bit more tricky to do and to standardize from one lab to another. Mutations are either there or they're not there, and IHC is a more subjective thing. You're looking at the intensity of staining. It may have to do with how long the actual chemical stain was on the tissue before it was rinsed off. So there are some technical issues with interpretation of IHC, which I think we'll have to work out. But I have given this regimen to some squamous cell patients who I felt could handle a triplet, and I have actually have seen some good results. So, you know, stay tuned for what will happen with the flex regimen. And then I think has already been mentioned by some of the other speakers, but genotyping of squamous cell is going to reveal more and more mutations, translocations, and amplifications over the coming years, I believe. And FGFR1, I think, is one of the first ones that will probably come to the forefront as far as new treatments. If you're not familiar with FGFR, it's fibroblastic growth factor receptor, and there are abnormalities in FGFR in many types of cancers, just like the HER2 family, which includes EGFR and HER2 and ERBB3. There are a whole family of FGFR receptors, and most relevant for lung cancer is amplification of FGFR1. But you can see that all these other types of cancers that listed here have abnormalities in FGFR, and there are now specific targeted FGFR inhibitors, and we learned at this year's AACR a couple of months ago that, in fact, one of these compounds did have a very impressive response, cause a very impressive response in a lung cancer patient with FGFR1 amplification. So stay tuned for that. And so that's what I had to say about squamous. Hopefully there'll be more to say next year.
Thanks, Lisa.